Truthspresso, episode 293.
Face it, we all would rather sleep in this morning. That's why God gave us espresso, to kickstart our zombified corpses into hyperdrive. And now, giving your mind and soul the morning shot of truth it craves. This is Truthspresso with Daniel Minnick.
Well, hey there, friends, family, foes, and lurkers alike. This is your host, Daniel Minnick, for another episode of Truthspresso. And you can probably tell that my voice is a little strained right now. I still am struggling with the stuff that I got, other members of my family got a week ago. And as we have found out from others who have gotten this particular virus, they have told us to expect that this nasty stuff lasts quite a while. We could be looking at 2 weeks before we feel in any way human at all. So while I would normally replay an episode when my voice is not all it's cracked up to be, literally, it is cracked a little bit, so no pun intended there. Well, I guess pun fully intended there. But I'm going to press through because I really would like to cover the subject matter that has kind of captivated the news in the last several weeks and has kind of come to maybe a conclusion this week. Now, my wife and I had quite the week this week. Even as we have been struggling with stuff, we were invited on a special trip to Nashville, Tennessee, and not going to get into the details about that. I may talk about that in the future when things warrant, but that's just to say that we've had quite the week, even trying to deal with voices and health. We've still been quite busy. Now, for the topic of this episode of Truthspresso, I'd like to get into what I'd like to call clown world anti-Semitism. And if you've been keeping up with the news and seeing that the Ivy League institutions of higher learning in the United States have become quite the laughing stock, well, they have been for quite a while, but this really takes the cake as pro-Palestine protesters, not satisfied merely with chanting and holding signs, but somehow they think that the universities of which they are students, of which they are learning things, teachers are teaching them ideologies with which they agree, but somehow they think that these universities have benefited from or are currently benefiting in such a way from evils that they have allegedly been involved in the past. So that New York University or UCLA are somehow complicit in colonizing. And this latest war between Israel and the Palestinian Gaza, the Hamas there, somehow that has something to do with colonizing, and universities in the United States are part of that somehow. So pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian protesters, starting with a few weeks ago and including the week as of this recording, had been setting up encampments at various Ivy League institutions, including Columbia University, New York University, University of California, Los Angeles, or UCLA, Northwestern University, Rutgers, and others. Now, one would think that these young people who are going to college, allegedly for a career path in the United States here, what interest do they really have in a conflict that is nearly halfway around the world? It doesn't directly impact them in any way. Well, for many of these, you might even bring up the question to them, and you might ask, what are you protesting about? And they might actually, when really pressed with the question, admit to you that they're not quite certain what they're protesting about. In fact, I suspect that there are plenty more like this particular young lady who I'm going to play who admits that she's actually clueless as to why she was involved in the protest and what the protest is about and is seeking to accomplish. So listen to this.
What would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
So she says that she honestly doesn't know why they're protesting. She asks a fellow protester nearby maybe to help her out there and explain why are they protesting. And the other protester right next to her admits that even she doesn't know. And she says, I wish I were more educated. But where are you going to get more educated than in an Ivy League institution of higher learning, right? And so there's this kind of cultic mindset of protesting that which you don't even know why you're protesting. She said at first that it has to do with standing up for Palestine, but she's not even quite sure what that even means. She doesn't know what the end goal of this is. She doesn't know exactly why, as the protesters around her were shouting, Palestine will be free. Do they even know what it means for Palestine to be free? Do they even know what Palestine is? So I'm sure they were fed a steady diet of Israel or the colonizers, but she probably doesn't even know any history other than, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, if someone's a colonizer and someone is the oppressed, then I must support the oppressed. And so it feels good to get together with a bunch of peers and to protest something. They said it's about making their voices heard. Well, yeah, there are plenty of young people now on college campuses making their voices heard, but they're not even sure what, you know, who needs to hear their voices and what their voices are about and even really what it means for people to hear them. Now, this is not the only instance recorded of a protester really being clueless of what he or she's protesting. Here's another clip where a reporter from Fox News was trying to ask a young lady some questions about what the protesters and she were chanting. And basically even, what do you mean by from the river to the sea? Do you even know what river and what sea we're talking about? Do you know if they're literal or not? And she couldn't even answer that. So let's hear that.
What does from the river to the sea mean?
It means that Palestine should be free and should be autonomous.
What river?
The expression is not anything bad.
No, there's an actual river and an actual sea.
Yeah, I'm aware of this.
No, but what river, what sea?
That literally is beside Israel and the Palestinian territories.
It's the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea.
Now, ever since the October 7th massacre and all that has happened since then, for a while I had been thinking to myself, how is there so much anti-Semitism stewing around the world? And even particularly in the United States, just waiting to come out. It was just all boiling beneath the surface. That's just so freaky. But now, I kind of have second thoughts about that. As implausible as it may seem, I think the vast majority of the rampant anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment in Western countries in particular, you know, countries that actually may not even have a stake in this particular battle, or those who do, but it's kind of a secondary one. Western countries, the anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment in Western countries, as we have seen through these protesters, that has been manufactured since October 7th, 2023. it's not that all this Jew hatred and anti-Semitism and being against the nation of Israel, that hasn't really been boiling in particular beneath the surface, just waiting to come out. It has been manufactured. Now, that's not to say there weren't already existing preconditions for this to happen. There was already ideological ground cultivated to germinate the seeds of this clown world anti-Semitism. And what is that ideological ground that has cultivated the seeds? That is cultural Marxism. You see, the kids, the protesters who are now anti-Israel and pro-Hamas, although most of them won't say that that's what it is, they just say that they're pro-Palestine. They want Palestine to be free. They'll even repeat the mantra, from the river to the sea, just as the Hamas terrorists shouted. These young people are only that because they have been indoctrinated to be cultural Marxists, and now they've found the cause to rally around.
The good news is Striving for Eternity would love to come to your church to spend 2 days with your folks, teaching them biblical hermeneutics. That's right, the art and science of interpreting scripture. The bad news is somebody attending might be really upset to discover Jeremiah 29:11 should not be their life verse. To learn more, go to strivingforeternity.org to host a Bible interpretation made easy seminar in your area.
Now, as we have seen protesters with their encampments in different universities, we also get a taste of what their mindset is like, other than what they're saying in their chants. So let's look at what some UCLA protesters in their encampment were demanding for donations to keep their encampment going, you know, because if they set up a community outside and they're holding much of the university hostage and forcing other students to be deprived of their education, whatever that might be at the university, the protesters demanded things that would essentially keep their protest, their encampment going. Now, according to an article from the New York Post, which I will provide a link to in the show notes, from May 1st, 2024, the UCLA pro-Palestinian protesters made sure to emphasize what they urgently needed and what they forbade to be donated in kind of a printed sheet, a list. So you can see this list printed out, screenshotted on the New York Post article. Now, some of their urgent needs included things that they obviously wanted so as to keep the encampment going and to defend it. This included skater helmets, shields, wood for barrier, knee and elbow pads, rain ponchos, canopies, so things that they could protect themselves if they got into conflicts, things to maintain the barrier to keep hostile people out, and also things to protect themselves from the weather, at least the rain, because we will see in some of the things that they did not want donated, there were things that you would think someone might want, but they refused. They wanted to make sure that, hey, if you're going to support the cause, do not give us this. So on the list in their food section, they demanded, quote, hot food for lunch. And that has 3 exclamation points. And then this was followed by the word important in parentheses, and the word important was in all caps and had 2 exclamation points. So 5 exclamation points across the idea that, hey, we demand hot food. So let's think about this. To get hot food, those who were judiciously not involved in the protest, those cowards who weren't involved, still had an important role to play, according to the protesters, because, hey, if you're not going to protest with us, we could look down our noses at you as part of the problem. But you should be cooking us food. You should be making us fresh, hot food. They also said that they wanted vegan food. But of course, because there's bound to be vegans among the protesters. They also wanted gluten-free food. You know, like you see in the special menu at some restaurants. And they wanted ice. Now, what they wanted you to know that they didn't want was in bold print and underlined and had the word no in all caps. And that included no packaged food. Well, you know, because health and dignity and all that, right? I mean, if these students had a meal plan before the encampment, they can take over part of the campus and still get hot food delivered to them as if they would get it from the cafeteria or on-campus restaurants. So the sacrifice that they're making for the cause and setting up a bunch of tents and taking over the campus isn't enough of a sacrifice for them to have to put up with maybe some, you know, less fresh, more packaged, more pantry type items. Of course not. They also demanded no coffee. As if none of the students there drank coffee to stay up late studying for tests makes me wonder. But let me guess, coffee is too Western, right? They probably wanted tea, but no coffee because coffee probably has something to do with European white supremacy or something. Well, you know, you have Colombian coffee, you have coffee from pretty much anywhere in the world. Let's see, they demanded no bagels. Now, I think you could probably figure this out. I can only guess that this was their way of boycotting Jewish donuts, you know, so if their cause is anti-Israel and anti-Jew, anti-Semitic for free Palestine, don't you dare insult us by giving us any kind of Jewish food. Another thing they specifically tell us that they did not want was no bananas. Now, were they afraid that someone was going to slip on a banana peel and get hurt? Well, all kidding aside, I think this was because one of the protesters had an allergy to bananas. At least that's what the claim. It was like a fatal allergy to bananas. But now, bananas, for the sake of these protests, has become a symbol for weaponizing against the protesters. In fact, counter-protesters at UCLA allegedly mocked the protesters' antagonism to bananas by holding bananas like they were weapons and eating them in front of them. And I think some of them even smeared some bananas on the encampment. Bananas are the new guns, right? Still, another thing that the UCLA protesters demanded not be given them in the list was no nuts. Now, I thought nuts were healthy. Well, of course, some people are allergic to them. And I'm guessing that the protesters wanted to avoid all allergens, as if that were possible. Basically, just like with the bananas trying to cover their bases, hey, you will not covertly infiltrate our operation under the guise of humanitarian aid by giving us nuts and killing some of our members who are allergic to them. Or maybe it's because they already had all the nuts they needed in the encampment and they didn't want any more added. Okay, all kidding aside there. Oh yeah, they had a logistics section of their list, and under logistics they needed AA, AAA, C and D batteries, rope, zip ties, electric/solar-powered generators, lotion, aquifer. So I would guess that some of this was for keeping their enclave powered and maintaining sleeping accommodations, and some of it was for personal care. But the last item listed is something they did not want. No sunscreen. Yes, that is in bold and underlined, and the word no is in all caps. I could only imagine why they demanded no sunscreen. Now, there have been some recent questions about health issues with sunscreen, Perhaps they don't want something tempting them to protect their skin from the sun that could harm them. But my guess is possibly it's just an educator, maybe undereducated guess on my part here, but my guess is that lighter-skinned people are more likely to use sunscreen to avoid sunburns that could make their skin redder, and people with more melanin tend to use less of it. Therefore, sunscreen is possibly another symbol of white supremacy or something. Palestinians probably don't use sunscreen, so why should we? Is probably the thinking. Now, I could be proven wrong, but when it comes to the thought process of these people, it only makes you think of things like this. Now, the UCLA protesters had their demands, and I don't know if any of those demands were met. I haven't researched enough, but the New York Post also included an article by the same Catherine Donlevy mentioning that the protesters at Columbia University did have food delivered to them. The protesters at Columbia University did get some mysterious donors delivering and catering free food, from Dunkin' Donuts to Pret-A-Manager sandwiches to various packaged snacks. Now, if they accepted these things and everything that's listed in the article, the Columbia protesters may not have had the same rules as their UCLA counterparts, because packaged food was there, and there's a picture of a box of bananas among the goodies that they got.
I speak to parents all the time who come up to me and they see what's happening, but they don't know what to do. And I just want to stand up and say, you can do this. Here is a solution.
This is Yvette Hampton, host of the Schoolhouse Rocked podcast. Join us each week for a new episode as we offer encouragement and resources on biblical discipleship from popular speakers and authors, as well as parents just like you and me. Find out more at schoolhouserocked.com or listen anywhere you find your favorite podcast.
Now, what do we have to say to all this? A bunch of protesters at Ivy League schools in the United States somehow thinking that these universities that are the bastions of leftist propaganda were somehow involved in colonization, that they, you know, have some kind of support for the big evil Israel against freeing Palestine, and that therefore there's anything even remotely accomplished by protesters setting up an encampment at the university, setting up a bunch of tents, and living outside and making demands, and that somehow this is going to end up freeing Palestine? It looks to me like these are a bunch of spoiled, rotten young people who have grown up with their lives addicted to screens, phones, iPads, laptops, and scrolling through social media and having everything handed to them and never having had to work for what they want in their lives and having no meaning or purpose in any personal virtue and work. Cultural Marxism is the only way that these young people can find purpose, because they want to belong to something bigger than themselves, and that is a natural desire for humans. And so when that's not fulfilled by the church, by Jesus Christ, by the gospel, by the morality such as from Jesus Christ, then it's going to be filled by something else. These young people want to be part of something great. They want to be sheep in a grand struggle, and the only morality in their minds is saving the designated oppressed group from the oppressors or the colonizers. Now, before we just all bash on those Gen Z kids, what does this say about many boomer grandparents or Gen X or older millennial parents? The kids are often evidence of the parents and how they were raised. These parents from the previous generations have been shirking their own responsibility to be parents. They've become self-centered and lived off the material success of society up to this point. and they've mortgaged the souls of their children to the institutions of society. They expect institutions to do the parenting for them. And these spoiled protesters are the product. And so for those in older generations who like to point the finger at the spoiled, rotten Gen Z students who are part of these types of protests, while there is much to criticize for it, we have to ask the question, are there three fingers and a thumb pointing back at you? How have you raised your children such that they're better thinkers and they can discern and they're not going to be swept up in this kind of cause because they have no purpose and you haven't been involved in rearing them? So let's get back to cultural Marxism. So what is cultural Marxism? Now, there have been various definitions. The term has been around for a while because Marxism itself is kind of an economic social theory. And the first Marxists considered cultural issues secondary to the economic thing. They wanted to make sure they can control the means of production and the economy and everything else would follow. But when it comes to the kind of Marxism that defined the Frankfurt School in Germany, and the Frankfurt School has very much influenced academia in Western countries. The Frankfurt School, with their critical theories, have basically decided that cultural issues, social issues, are really the means by which they can get a Marxist takeover of the structures of a nation, the institutions. And so what do? They look to culture, and you know, with Marxism, you have the bourgeois and the proletariat, the wealthy bourgeois and the poor proletariat, and they find this dichotomy, the oppressed and the oppressor, in various contexts, and that could be identity or ethnicity. And so what cultural Marxists will do is they'll find a symbol to rally around and say, here's the oppressed group, here's the oppressor group in whatever context, in whatever cultural social issue. And according to their critical theories, we have to understand things in terms of how the past has indirectly and structurally and systematically resulted in one group obtaining power and controlling the other group to the extent that possibly they might not even realize it, but they've been compliant and they need to be awakened to the reality that they're under the thumb of the oppressor group. And so they need to become loud, and they need to use force to overcome and overthrow the oppression, the colonization. And so now, since October 7th, Palestine seems to be really the latest symbol, the token for cultural Marxism. Back in the summer of 2020, it was George Floyd, and still is. In February 2022, it became Ukraine when Putin invaded it because of Biden's incompetency and basically leaving the back door open with his policies. And Ukraine still is a symbol for cultural Marxist thought. And now since October 7th, 2023, Palestine is the big symbol for it, and it still is. And we know from history that eventually this too shall pass and there will be yet another symbol for cultural Marxist plight. Now, given how we've seen the pride flag seemingly every year gets a makeover and an addition, I wouldn't be surprised if the next iteration of a pride flag or a transgender flag adds colors or shapes from the Palestine flag to make Palestinians official and honorary members of the pride community. Oh, thrill, I bet they would love that, but those in liberal Western society don't seem to understand that the Palestinians that they want to free, however they might understand and define that, would not tolerate their ideology, their promiscuous gender ideologies, and so forth. the Palestinians, who are most likely Muslims, who are fighting for their freedom from the river to the sea, are not very keen to the LGBTQIA plus, you know, whatever letters you want to add to that acronym, and would likely oppress them.
The Christian podcast community is a cohesive group of like-minded Christian podcasters proclaiming the truths of Christ with expertise and passion in the areas of theology, church history, Christian living, evangelism, apologetics, parenting, homeschooling, sermons, and much, much more. So check us out at ChristianPodcastCommunity.org. ChristianPodcastCommunity.org. One stop for all your favorite Christian podcasts.
Now getting back to cultural Marxism and how we got here, you've heard the term the long march through the institutions. And that was a term coined by socialist activist Rudi Dutschke in the late 1960s, and Herbert Marcuse, a German-American critical theory philosopher of the Frankfurt School of Thought, adopted this term in his book Counter-Revolution and Revolt. As we have observed this long march of Frankfurt School critical theory and cultural Marxism has been long indeed over the decades and has been tremendously successful. I mean, what established institution of higher learning hasn't been taken over by cultural Marxist thought? And for those professors and administrators who are having to deal with the upset of these encampments taking over the institutions, well, you made your bed and now you've got to sleep in it. They're just basically following orders that you have given them. I mean, how many, unless they're private, like Christian schools and stuff, haven't been completely taken over by leftist cultural Marxist thought? You know, there's an article from thecrimson.com, which is a Harvard article, and the title of it is More Than 80% of Surveyed Harvard Faculty Identify as Liberal. This was from July 13th, 2022. We'll provide a link to that article in the show notes. Now, more than 80% of the surveyed faculty identify as liberal. That's a pretty high number. But even that doesn't tell the whole story. Because if you look at the pie chart that they've constructed, the 80%, there's much less conservative thought than you even realize. So according to the pie chart there, only 1.46% of the faculty actually identified as conservative and none identified as very conservative. So you had someone who admitted to being conservative, and then you have a chunk that identifies as moderate, but 45.03% identified as liberal, and with a whopping additional 37.43% identifying as very liberal. So we see that maybe there's a token professor or two that admits to being quote-unquote conservative, but not very conservative. But a big chunk of the, you know, 80% say they're liberal, and about half of those who say they are say that they're very liberal. So we could see the incredible liberal cultural Marxist thought that pervades Harvard. And of course, Harvard's not unique in this regard. I'm pretty sure that every Ivy League institution and state institutions have similar distributions there. Now, these protests aren't lasting forever, and quite a few of them are finally getting broken up. So I want to play a clip that shows Some students with their makeshift shields, they have their version of riot gear. They made shields out of 55-gallon plastic trash cans. Basically, they cut out a segment and they hold it as a shield. And they tried to basically run through police who were going to stop their encampment. And we could see how that went over.
But then they retreated from the library when the cops arrived. Watch.
Boom! So a student, you know, you'll have to watch the clip linked in the show notes, but one of these students with a trash can shield bumped into a police officer and his shield didn't really help him and he just fell flat on his back and dropped the shield. And then the police just grabbed him and yeah, it's great. It's, you know, you watch that and you want to laugh, but it also kind of makes you want to cry. If this is what the modern left has to offer civilization, I pray there are enough people with a brain cell that see how destructive this clown world ideology really is. And that avoiding this type of stuff will make the truth shine even brighter to them, because God can use the depths of depravity to show people the truth. Now these protesters, they're trying to argue and quarrel and fight and threaten violence because of a cause that they think warrants it. And the Bible talks about why people argue, quarrel, fight, and war and commit violence. If we look at James chapter 4 and read the first three verses, James says, "From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence even of your lusts that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts." So we see a particular word that James mentions in his understanding of what causes fightings and wars, and that word is lust. It's all based on someone's lust to have something that he didn't earn. If you want something, you can try to work for it and earn it. If you don't think that you could ever be able to earn it, you can always ask. Now, if you do ask and you don't get it, it is up to you to evaluate why you didn't get it. What is your motivation to have this? Is it lust? If it is, then it's probably wrong. And these clown world pro-Palestine cultural Marxist protests are all about lust. There's always the idea that if someone is materialistically unhappy, it's somehow someone else's fault. And the remedy isn't humility, sacrifice, having a virtuous purpose beyond one's own self-indulgence. It's always that some colonizers or oppressors are keeping stuff away from the oppressed. It's not necessarily that they're denying the oppressed certain potentials such that they can work, save, take care of family, and prosper. It's that they're just exerting power to take a bigger piece of the world's pie from others. And the solution is simply to distribute the pie so that everyone can consume it equally. And of course, the solution has to start with so-called reparations of letting the oppressed group tip the scales and consume a greater portion of the pie to make up for their losses. I would say that Marxism, in all its forms, embodies what James chapter 4, verses 1 through 3 is talking about. Now, by the way, if you must look for the oppressor group, look for it in the administrative state. Look for it in government institutions. Look for it in those who tax and regulate others in ways that are not biblical. Look for it not in some ethnic group or nation at large, but in the shadow government of any given nation. If you do that, I might be with you on it. But if you're looking at the world through some kind of cultural Marxist lens, you will always be part of the clown world. I hope this episode was helpful, entertaining, challenging, encouraging, as I gave my little viewpoint on some of the current cultural Marxist manifestations in these pro-Palestine protests and encampments at Ivy League institutions. You know, and we can only pray that this clown world stuff is kind of reaching its peak for the moment, that people will see just how ridiculous this is, and that maybe this will be a turning point, and maybe people will start to wake up and realize that there's a better way. And of course, that way is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so stay tuned for the next episode of Truth Espresso, where hopefully my voice will sound better, and God bless.
Thank you for waking up with Truth Espresso. Good morning, and God bless your day.
Hey friends, Daniel Minnick here again. If you liked waking up to this episode of Truth Espresso, I would really appreciate it if you would rate it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever application you use to listen to Truth Espresso.